And how communism is 20th century Americanism. I have pamphlets up the house on this foolish, on these kind of subjects that the Stalins put out, pamphlets they put out in those days. While in France, to get back to France and the People's Front, the Communist Party grew like the devil in this country overnight. Once they stopped this foolish social fascism, and started to yak about how they loved the United States, and they used to wrap themselves up in the red, white, and blue, and all this crazy array for Roosevelt. They didn't reveal their membership in the Communist Party. They paraded, a lot of them paraded as members of the Democratic Party. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. In France, to show you how the class struggle was developing, in 1934, the YCL had 4,000 members. 1934. 2 years later, in 1936, they had 100,000 members. This is only an indication of how the class struggle was deepening in France. The trade unions that opened up with one strike after the other in 1935, they started to get their wind, and the rank and file started to kick over the traces of the trade union movement in France. The membership jumped from 2 million to 5 million in 2 years, 1934 to 1936. They were led by a wild-eyed anarchist named Joe Hawks, who thought that strikes were a terrible curse. That was the extent of his radicalism. He was just an outright faker, like all politicians. He was a working-class politician. He's like we'd say Mamie of the United States. You know, he was the same as Joe Hawks, head of the trade unions. But the trade unions started to develop under different leaderships too. The Catholic Church stepped in and organized some unions. The Communist Party organized some unions, and so forth. And there was no question down about it that in France, with these developments and lining up the polarization of the classes, there was no question down about it that socialism was on the agenda. That was what the workers wanted, and that's what they were going to get. And in 1936, the People's Front had their big elections, and they won the election. Well, now, you and I know the understanding of the average worker. The average worker, unfortunately, doesn't read and study. He's too busy making a living and wrestling with the goddamn problems that come from trying to make a living. And his reading is at a minimum. So their idea of the government is that you will vote, and when you vote, well, that's it. You vote a Democratic, and you get a good Democratic guy like Johnson, who's opposed to the war, and so forth. See? Sometimes they might double-cross you. Well, in France, they had the People's Front, and what was the People's Front? Socialist? Geez, I want socialism. Communism? Hey, boy, that's what we should have here. Another communism like we had in Russia in 1917. And then you had the Radical Socialist Party that was falling apart, but was picked up by the Communist Party and demanded that to the Socialist Party that they be allowed in the People's Front. They were rehabilitated, in other words, by the People's Front. But the Socialist Party came out with the biggest vote, and they took over the premiership against the wishes of the Communist Party. Because this man Blum, who was the leader of the French Socialist Party, was known to lean towards a pact with Germany against the Soviet Union. For that reason, the communists were opposed to him, but they couldn't do anything about it. Well, the workers said, well, geez, we won, huh? We voted for socialism, we got a majority, so I guess we're going to have socialism now, huh? Let's start tomorrow morning, huh? We won, and we take over the factories. Capitalists believe in democracy. What the hell? We won. So they'll say, well, I guess you won. Take my factory. That's what J.D. Rockefeller will do in this country. Well, the big corporations say, well, you guys won the election. Take my General Motors and run it for yourself from now on. The workers occupied the factories. They took over the factories all over France. Not just one factory here and another one out in Toledo. No, no, no. All over France, the workers sat in the factories. They learned this lesson from the rise of the trade union movement in this country, particularly the rubber workers. They were the first ones in this country that on a national scale did it. The IWW did it in Schenectady around 1908. But in France, the workers sat in the factories and proclaimed them as their own, all over France. Not only that, but overnight, the bank clerks, the maids, all these backward workers that have nothing to do with the trade union movement, that don't identify themselves with the working class. All of them rallied to the working class overnight. They were all inspired by this great victory, of voting victory, with the concept that now we're going to start the council of the goddamn pigs. That's the way they looked at it. I'm a maid, but I'm going to settle with that bitch that's been insulting me and making me feel like dirt for the last 10 years and so. They all rallied to the People's Front. This was a general strike, a general takeover of industry by the French workers. Well, how are we going to get out of this jam? Well, naturally, the capitalist politicians aren't going to say anything because they have no credit with the French workers. Everybody and anybody knows that the ones that have the most influence and have the best credentials, the Communist Party, they're revolutionaries. Look what they did in Russia. So the Communist Party had to take over the load of breaking the strike. And that's what they did. The Socialist Party didn't have enough credentials. Everybody knew they were led by millionaires, like Blum was a millionaire, and a poet to boot. And Comrade Torres, the beloved leader of the French Communist Party, like Browder was the beloved leader here, like Comrade Stalin was the beloved leader in Russia and so forth. Torres says, we must know when to end strikes. In other words, let's break the strike, boys, and get the fellows out of the factories and return the property to their rightful owners. That's what he meant. Well, out of this, there was no great exodus by the workers. The workers said, oh, Jesus, he might say that, but bull. I want a shorter work week. I want a raise. I want some insurance and so forth and so on. And they got it. They refused to leave the factory, just like what the Communist Party said. Do you ever read anything about that in France, John? Sure, they get everything. Well, you don't have to be in the Marxist movement for a lifetime to realize that the capitalists had their back against the wall and they gave these concessions with that understanding. Look at it. They got a gun against our head. For Christ's sake, agree to anything. Then we'll gradually pull the rope in. We'll pay off their leaders and so forth. We'll get everything back. And that's what they did. But they didn't get it overnight. From 1936 until the outbreak of the war, it's safe to say that there were at least 15 general strikes in France. 15 general strikes. I don't mean the steelworkers. All the steelworkers went on strike. General strike of steelworkers. I don't mean the gas workers went on strike in Paris like they do periodically now. General strikes all over the country. At least 15 of them, I dare say. Catholic unions, communist unions. Communist Party said their unions don't go on strike, and in some cases they would scab. But in general, all of them went on strike time and time again, with the Communist Party frothing at the mouth to break the strikes and get the workers back to work. And naturally, the Socialist Party stayed in the background, let the Communist Party do the dirty work. And that's what they did. But Stalinism, one feature of Stalinism is this, and we must remember, they aren't interested in the welfare of the workers. They're interested only in using the workers to implement the foreign policy of the Soviet Union. That's all. Nothing else. That's what they did in this country in 1940 to 45, and after that, of course. But I mean during the wartime. Well, Stalinism wasn't satisfied with the great victory that the People's Front had made. They wanted to implement it with more allies. And they wanted to get people with a little sense in their head, that have their feet on the ground, that aren't wild-eyed Reds. So they appealed for them fascists to join the People's Front. Did you know that, John? Go back and read it. Yeah, John knows. Yeah, it's part of the tradition of the French comrades, I suppose. These scoundrels appealed to the fascists. Because we know there's some peace-loving fascists. So the peace-loving fascists should all join the People's Front. Well, they aren't satisfied with that. They thought there's a lot of people that aren't fascists. You know, they're petty bourgeois people that don't believe in the Socialist Party, the Communist Party. They don't believe in the Croix de Four or any other fascist organization. Well, we got to find a place for them. So what we should have is not the People's Front. We should have the Front for Frenchmen. Remember that, John? Front for Frenchmen. Where all good, peace-loving Frenchmen should join in the great crusade against Hitlerism. Well, you say, didn't the Socialist Party complain about this strike breaking by the communists? When they drew up the agreement for this People's Front, they had a section in there that said there must be no criticism of one party by another, which was a complete violation of the United Front according to Lenin. Remember, we said we make a United Front to confront the common enemy. Secondly, to break down the organizational barriers between us and the other working class parties. By how? By criticism. We say, if we were in the Communist Party, we would say the Socialist Party is wrong in thinking that by appealing to the United States Supreme Court, the fascists can be disbanded and routed. This can only be done by the working class, and it's a terrible mistake for the leadership of the Socialist Party to preach this kind of nonsense among their rank and file. You'd say this criticism, not in a fighting manner, but in a fraternal sense, because you want to reach the rank and file of the Socialist Party and pull them out of the Socialist Party into the Trotskyist Party. That's for the meaning of the United Front. How else can you win? What are you going into the United Front for, if not to build your party? That's the main interest in our life, to build a party. We don't go into these maneuvers and so forth just to be good fellows. To hell with that. I can get down the library and enjoy reading books. I enjoy that a hell of a lot. And if it comes to just going into maneuvers for the sake of maneuvers, I'd rather go down there and read. No, it's you go in the United Front to smash your opponent and also to smash the people that you're working with by proving that your program is superior and the one that can answer the questions. Well, in France that was ruled out, and the result was the communists had free hand. At one time the socialists did criticize them, and the Communist Party unloaded on them and called their attention to the section of the United Front agreement that ruled out any criticism. That's it, comrades. I might say that at this time, during 1938, the People's Front existed from 1935 right up to the outbreak of war. In 1938, Comrade Cannon went to Europe, to 1937 rather, to help organize and laid the basis for the formation of the Fourth International in 1938. And before he left the United States, he went to Minneapolis and he raised $1,700 from the Minneapolis comrades, particularly from the trade union comrades, that the comrades had worked in the trade union apparatus of the Teamsters Union. He hit them on the basis that they were open to corruption, and they have to remember that they aren't trade unionists first. They're social revolutionaries first, and then trade unionists afterwards. And one of the best ways to remind you guys of this is to, if I have you kick in a few bucks right now, so that I can bring it to France to aid our French comrades. And Jim Cannon left the United States with $1,800 in his kick for the French party. That was a sign of the international solidarity of our movement. That's about it, comrades, and it's half past two, so the comrades have time to look at the game. Any questions, comrades? No? Yeah?
Sure. A couple of weeks ago, I brought a question to you, and you asked me to bring it up at this meeting. Could you please explain what the bureaucratic collectivism is supposed to be?
Yeah, bureaucratic collectivism was a term that was raised by Schachmann in the fight.